This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Daniel Wu, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is the great Seth Partnow of The Athletic, of the Mid-Range Theory book, of Nerder, She Wrote the podcast, and we have a really wide-ranging, fun conversation. Starts out at the top of the East, but we talk plenty about the Western Conference, different things that are giving us doubt about each of the teams, and where things might be going from here, what we're going to focus on. One note I will say at the outset is that due to some latency issues, there were a couple times where we talked over each other. One person didn't know that the other person had stopped or had not stopped due to that latency. So apologies for that. I tried to clean up as much of it as I could. There will be some instances, particularly in the first 15 minutes, and then after that, it should be much better. So apologies for that. Also, this podcast is brought to you by betonline.ag. Use that CLNS50 code to tell them you came from us and to get a 50% welcome bonus. You can check that out. And podcast runs about an hour. I hope you really enjoy it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Danny. It has been, how long has it been?
I think it's been a fair amount of time, Actually. Considering the amount that we discuss in various different forms that we haven't done it as a podcast. Well, I did call in with you, I guess, which was fun. Talked about that at the trade deadline.
That seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? And it was like 2 weeks.
It's been a very wild stretch of time. I want to start this with a basic question that isn't actually a basic question, which is, knowing what we know right now, who is the most likely team to win the Eastern Conference?
Why are you asking?
Because I don't know the answer, and you're very intelligent, and I thought maybe you would.
We part of this is coming off of being sort of flummoxed off of the last 2 days, where both the two of the supposed favorites just got hammered. The Philly obviously getting mollywopped in the Ben Simmons return game, and then Miami getting similarly drilled at home by Phoenix the night before.
And I'm happy you brought up at home, but not only did both these teams lose at home to these other teams, they also lost to shorthanded versions of these other opponents. You know, like Chris Paul is, of course, still out, and Ben Simmons is still out.
Right. I mean, however, Jimmy Butler, you do have to say Jimmy Butler didn't.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Though it's funny when you get in these conversations, Miami hasn't been fully healthy. It's like, well, that's like, we knew that. Like, you, first of all, guys on the Heat miss games, I think probably related to their like conditioning stuff. But also, like, they added old guys who tend to get injuries here and there. We can put aside the Lowry missing time for personal reasons, but even so, you can, oh my gosh, they've been missing Kyle Lowry for a bunch of the season, and Jimmy Butler for a bunch of the season, and Bam Adebayo for a bunch of the seasons. Like, they have a team of guys who gets hurt. So it's not like that you just can't fill in the when Miami is fully healthy and just assume that's a playoff thing, because they have guys who get hurt. And that's sort of a known thing for a relatively thin team in terms of guys who you really trust in the playoffs. So while you do have to mention that Jimmy Butler is out, that's not like it's not a get out of jail free card for him.
For sure. And I think part of what has been such a lingering challenge for me here with especially the top four teams, then if we want to add in the Nets, though, I think their path is fundamentally different because they're going to be a lower seed.
So wait, the top four teams, who do you mean by the top four teams? Because I don't think the top four teams in the East are – I don't think anyone thinks the top four teams in the East are
Not standings. Yeah. What I consider the four strongest teams in no particular order. That's kind of the point here, is that they're not in a particular order.
Yeah.
Heat, Bucks, Sixers, Celtics. I think those are the four the four best as playoff teams. You know, full strength Chicago will be a fun, interesting team. I don't think of them as having the same kind of ceiling, and the same with the Cavs.
Yeah, I think,
and Raps,
and especially Cavs with Jared Allen. You know,
sure,
whatever's going to happen. Like, you know, they're at a certain point. They've probably well past the point of too banged up to.
Well, and the other part of it, there are two long threads that I generally think are, now, the Cavs have defied my expectations at every point, but one is their offense is decidedly not versatile. You know, like they're doing it, and Darius Garland is amazing, but they're doing it in kind of one or two specific ways. They don't have that many other methods to attack. And then the other one is the general truism, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, that young teams, especially teams where a vast majority of their players are making their first playoff appearance, they generally, you know, they don't do super well because it's a big adjustment. And Cleveland, in all likelihood, especially with this Jared Allen injury, the exception to that can be when one of those teams in their first visit has a really favorable first round matchup. Like, let's say you end up doing really well and you get a surprise two seed, and then you get a more favorable one. That is the sort of thing that can happen. But Cleveland, with Jared Allen being out, that's not possible.
Well, I mean, the other one is like having, you know, as good as Darius Garland has been this year, but having like an emergent superstar
in
your first, you know, this is so long ago, but did the Warriors just scare somebody their first year in the playoffs, or did they actually win the first round series?
No, the Warriors, the first time the Warriors made the playoffs, they faced the Spurs and almost had a 2-0 lead on the road. You know, they almost won both of the first two games in San Antonio. They blew the second one, and then they ended up losing the series in six.
Okay.
But that could have, you know, and then the next year they beat Denver.
Right.
That very well could have, you know, that's kind of, you think of that as a really interesting example of that. Also, well, no, I was going to say the Luka Dallas team got close, but you know they got closer second year than they did first year.
Yeah, but those are still, I mean, you know, Doncic and Curry versus Darius Garland, like we're not, it's not a fair comparison to Darius Garland, and that really denigrates what he's done this season. But he's not those guys.
No, he isn't. And so part of what makes this exercise so challenging for me is all of those four teams, and you could honestly throw the Nets in here as well, because when they're at full strength, they're as good. They can be, well, we don't know what they are at full strength because they haven't been this iteration. But like all of them, there is a case for it. Like you can, okay, well, they, you know, like the Sixers, Joel Embiid and James Harden, you know, that combination might just be unguardable. You can't do anything 2-on-2. They have enough support players.
Or.
And then, so you have those sorts of like affirmative cases for all of these franchises. But then you also have the reasons for pause, concern, or outright terror for all of them. And I'm used to a circumstance where for like there's one team I trust more or something like that. That might lead me a little bit to the Bucks, but they're a different team than they were last year too.
Well, so here's the real thing is usually, you know, this is something, you know, KP, Kevin Pelton and I like bang on this a lot, is that, you know, the full season is the full season, and your resume is not destiny, but it tells you a lot about a team, with the big caveat that if there's like a major change in personnel somewhere in the season, like some of the stuff early in the season doesn't really count. Now, of those five teams, with the exception of Miami, which we kind of just talked about, none of them, they're assuming like reasonable health in the playoffs, none of them have a reasonable season sample of what that team looks like. So that's the other thing that makes it hard.
You think that is a phenomenal point, and it's that, and also like there isn't necessarily a prior season sample with any of these teams,
with
like
the possible exception of the Bucks.
Yes,
and
possible,
and you know, the Bucks minus Brook Lopez, do we think that is a, would they go in that top 4 to 5 group if they're just not, like, for whatever reason, Brook is not healthy, not available, not effective? I kind of think they move more into the frisky and dangerous category than having enough to win three seven-game series against these other teams. I don't know. Maybe that's being too pessimistic.
If you move them down, I would have to really think about that. So I would maybe put them in kind of a separate group above some of those teams.
Jordan Wara and sorry?
No, I was going to say that like I think I would still have them above some of the other – like if we're putting like let's say Chicago because I think that they're the best suited to handle the inferior teams. Like they might be in a group by themselves if they're not in that top group. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think they would be maybe like friskier than the Bulls, just because you know Giannis is better than DeMar DeRozan. Hot take. But yeah, like if without Lopez, like what do they do against Embiid? Who do they have to guard KD? Like do they have enough? Do they have enough shooting against Boston? Do they all these things that you know?
It's even the more basic point of what is their best five and what other players are viable if you need something different. So obviously Giannis, Middleton, and Jrue Holiday are out there, but then are you going to go super small with like Connaughton and Grayson Allen? Do you trust Bobby Portis in those circumstances? And Nate talks about this really well, that especially in the later rounds of the playoffs, it's often about the severity of your weaknesses as well as the severity of your strengths, like if you're truly unguardable and all that. And so Bobby Portis has done better in this regular season than I expected, but can he do that against the other teams we were just talking about?
No, and even in last year's playoffs, there were series that were good Bobby Portis series and series that were bad Bobby Portis series. And, you know, there's a little bit of matchup dependency there. I will say that, like, I think his probably biggest weakness might come against, like, a heavy pick-and-roll team, and that doesn't look like, aside from Philly, who they have, you know, other problems with anyway, doesn't seem like any of the top contenders are going to be like that heavy pick and roll. If you play drop coverage on us, you're no load of hurt. Like they're not facing Trae Young. Like basically is what that comes down to. And this year's version of the Nets probably isn't that as much though. When they have Simmons, maybe they become so. So, but yeah. So that's a good, but still, like you're talking about, okay, you got your three guys, and I would say in almost every matchup, assuming he's healthy, like Connaughton is a guy you pencil in as the fourth, both because I think he did very well in the playoffs last year and like the level of trust that, you know, Mike Budenholzer has in him. So he's going to be out there until like proven otherwise. But then is it Grayson Allen? Is it George Hill? Is it Bobby Portis? Is it Javon Carter? Like there are
is it Serge Ibaka with like some sort of painkilling injection administered every minute into his back?
When has a one time very good center getting minutes when they shouldn't in the postseason? When has that got wrong for anybody?
Never. I mean there have even been never super good centers that have gotten minutes in that.
Hey, at least Philly solved their backup center. Anyway.
I mean, for me, my brain goes to. I mean, if for people who
we're going all the way back. We're talking about Varejao in the 17 finals.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about Dwight Howard last year in the second round. We're talking about
The non-Embiid minutes in that Raptors Sixers series a couple years ago.
Non-Embiid minutes in Philly's playoff history, which are somehow, even though they had that solved for most of the season, and like yes, you give up your backup center to go from Seth Curry to James Harden, but that's all of a sudden the old weakness rears its head again.
Right, and it's tale as old as time, and they're Philly in that circumstance. It's so interesting. We brought up the idea of who is the other person, and Philly has some like best five questions as well. I'm so thrilled with how Tyrese Maxey has played, and so that solves some of it. But it's like for Philly, it's more the idea of, when things are getting bad, do I trust that Doc Rivers will adjust and that he will make the right adjustment? And probably not.
Philly is like, do they have questions or do they have choices?
I think they have more choices than the Bucks do, but I have questions make the right choice.
That's a fair point, but I think that they are choices rather than questions, and there are plenty of wrong choices to be made, so maybe it's functionally the same problem, but like okay, well,
whereas
we need
Brooklyn
a wing
has questions.
Yeah, we need a wing defender, so okay, well, Danny Green, like what Danny Green has, or do we pick between Danny Green or Matisse Thybulle? you can choose wrong there, but that's still a choice to be made.
Sure. And then I would say Brooklyn, because of the structure of their roster and everything else, they have more questions than choices. They just don't. I mean, I was thinking about this in that game that they played. Was that one the one against? Oh, that was against the Celtics when they were closing with Dragic. And was it LaMarcus? They had in crunch time, they had two players that were out there. And I'm like, I'm not even sure these guys should be in a playoff rotation. And one of those spots will be resolved by Ben Simmons. But I mean, conceptually, theoretically. But I mean, that's a really weird question for them. And then the other team that's lingering. Well, so we should talk about the other two, though, with, you know, this idea of questions versus choices. How do you feel about Boston in that respect?
I mean, I've been circling around why not Boston for a long time here. They have some of both. Like their question is where do they get enough shooting? But other than that, they have options, it seems like, in many other possible matchups. Just the versatility that their top seven or so has defensively gives them a lot of possible configurations. Like, okay, you have Tatum and Brown and Smart are in basically every meaningful lineup. Then who else? Well, you got Robert Williams, you got Al Horford, you got Grant Williams, you got Derek White. That's a lot of different ways you can put that puzzle together.
Agreed. And I might have Marcus Smart a little bit more tenuously. Just, I mean, we could see how some of the teams approach it defensively. Like if they just let Marcus Smart shoot, maybe you want Derek White out there, and maybe the other team doesn't have that kind of perimeter threat, but almost everyone that's good enough does.
I think that's it's a similar thing to whether or not, he's a better player also, but it's a similar thing to Pat Connaughton in he will be out there. So
yeah,
like,
that's fair. Yeah, we shouldn't think about whether he should, because he will.
Yeah.
And that's totally fair. The last team we haven't talked about, and this was always one of my big concerns about Miami, was they have different options for certain spots. Like, I don't think you, unless it's exactly the right opponent, you want to play Robinson and Hero together. It's just too much defensive limitations against, let's say, top four, top six teams in the league. Like, sure, against another team, that's why it's, in the regular season we want to do it. But so for them, let's say the locked in Jimmy, Bam, Kyle, PJ? Or does I would say PJ's in almost all the time, maybe not all the time.
Maybe. I mean, shooting, I think, we were talking about this on Nerder, which came out today, and it struck me that Caleb Martin is a really important player for them this postseason.
Mm-hmm. And Caleb Martin, part of why I'm so excited about his potential fit here is because he does something different than a lot of the other guys. Like, to an extent, even though they succeed and fail in somewhat different ways, Hero, Robinson, and Max Strus, you're not going to use them in the same way, but you're going to fill the same basic set of offensive and defensive responsibilities with them, get some
shot creation and hide them on the other end.
Exactly. And that's also why you generally won't have the luxury of playing two of them, because that's a lot to cover up. And
right,
maybe against certain teams you can, but I don't think you can against like the Bucks or the Sixers or any of the NBA Finals teams. The question is,
given who the Bucks might have out there, can you? There's a potential for there to be some hiders out there for, depending on who's available for Milwaukee in certain lineups. Certainly, bench lineups for Milwaukee.
Bench lineups for sure. And I'm thinking more closing five, but yeah, you're right. You're right about that for sure. And I'm so encouraged that Miami has players that have stepped into that. Because, I mean, I had two big skepticisms for Miami going into this season. One was their half-court offense, especially in crunch time. That has not been resolved for me at all. The other one was functional depth optionality in both the regular season and for optionality in the regular season and optionality in key moments. And that one I do feel truly better on. I think that Caleb Martin, Strus, Gabe Vincent, who's had a really nice year, maybe Victor Oladipo.
Okay, you start
probably not.
You start to count on Oladipo and Strus and Gabe Vincent. Like, okay,
well, I don't think it's count on. I think it's like, if they're doing well, you can give them some time.
Yeah.
As long as Lowry's available, I think that's the threshold.
That's very much need to see it to believe that. Incidentally, by the way, that this gets back to, like, I flashed back to, like, how much of a sore thumb Grayson Allen was at time in last year's playoffs, and was equating that to what we might see from, what the stretches you might see from those kind of guys on Miami. And then I remembered that Grayson Allen is going to be prominently involved for Milwaukee, which, you know, brings us back full circle to questions, not answers.
Right. And we talked about the different things for the Bucks, and Grayson Allen, who has been a consistent starter for them, was not in that, but it is a matter of trust.
He had some of the worst stretches of play that, you know, let's not undersell how disastrous some of his stints were in the play-in and playoffs last year.
And I mean, I think that's a big part of why the Memphis front office sold low on him, was just to take that club out of Taylor Jenkins' back.
Can't start him at first base.
there are a number of these teams, but Memphis with Dylan Brooks is probably pretty high on my list. Having good seasons, but also getting somebody important back long enough before the playoffs that you might actually get to see some stuff. Denver, I'm hoping Denver's in that camp. We don't have timelines yet on Murray and MPJ. I'm a little bit concerned. I'm thinking now that it's going to be more next year than this year.
So can we go there for a second, or are we stuck on the East?
No, let's go. You know me.
Getting Dylan Brooks back, is that, we sure that's a good thing for them?
No.
Okay. All right.
I don't think of Dylan Brooks, tell me if this is a term you're not familiar with. I don't think of Dylan Brooks as a Pareto optimal fit with them, but I do think he's like maybe he's preferred. Like he's better, but he's not better at everything. And Dylan Brooks, his propensity for taking bad shots is so much more relevant on a Memphis team that is all of a sudden really good, as opposed to a Memphis team that was feisty. Like those standards and thresholds change so thoroughly once you move to an elevated level of play.
So I don't know, like this. So I used to like to go bowling, and there's sort of, you know, when as you loosen up, you have a beverage or two, you start to bowl better, maybe after you know, midway through your second beer. At a certain point, it's too much and you fall off a cliff, and that sort of is like, there's a hard line where it becomes too much Dylan Brooks and it becomes a negative. And the question whether they have enough time over the rest of the season to reintegrate that, to get like him attempting to be 80% of what he has been doing, which is most of the good stuff, and not that last 20 kind of self-destructive bits where he's like, you know, fouling all the time and taking terrible pull-ups. And, you know, based on the fact that he was a great playoff performer last year, because he made all the terrible pull-ups last year, but not hasn't really done so for much of the rest of his career. And so that's sort of the worry, is whether they can actually, like, successfully cabin what is a useful player in the right dosage and a disastrous one in too high a dosage, if they can kind of keep that within sort of the acceptable range.
There is a second concern, and I don't know how to reconcile this for Memphis as a playoff team versus as a regular season team, is that adding Dylan Brooks to the rotation shifts everything else too. And some of that is taking minutes away from players that probably are not playoff performers. But another part of it might be, well, this changes things for Melton. This changes things. I mean, Zaire Williams hasn't been perfect, but there have been some elements that have been encouraging there. And I think he can fit in certain respects. And so
how much can you get to the Tyus Jones, Ja Morant backcourt?
Yes, exactly. And so all of those decisions that Jenkins has to make, it a jumble creates opportunities, but it creates opportunities for good things and for bad things all the same.
Chaos is a ladder. Oh, what a terrible show that turned out to be. Anyway, sorry. you made that pop into my head, so I had to share it with you.
More with Seth Partnow in a moment, but first a message from betonline.ag. Football might be over for the season, but basketball is in full steam for both pro and college hoops. From all the latest odds, totals, player performance props, to where the next fired coach is going to land, BetOnline is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code CLNS50 to get started. That 50 is because of that 50% welcome bonus. And BetOnline is not just basketball. They are your source for hockey, boxing, UFC, plus Olympic coverage is best in the business. From sports right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, BetOnline is your number one online wagering destination. It's the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports and play your favorite games. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Sorry, we were talking about the East. Let's get back to the East since we haven't solved that.
How much faith do you have? So I talked about before that my big concern with Miami is their half-court offense, especially against good teams. Do you have the same concern, or do you feel a little bit better about it than I do?
Nope. I share the same concern. Like, where does the spacing come from? You know, where does the spacing and shot creation come from against a playoff defense with a lineup that is going to play playoff defense? Like, you think about it. All right. Who are the four guys that they think they're most counting on to be their playoff stalwarts? It's Lowry, Butler, as you suggested, Tucker, Adebayo. Does Kyle Lowry have enough left to be a playoff, to drive an offense in the half court against a second round plus playoff team?
I like to think about this in terms of creating an advantage. And so it's like, how many players do they have, especially factoring in playoff officiating? So Jimmy Butler loses some of what can help him create advantages. And are you creating those advantages in a way that you can perpetuate them, get the blender going, as Quinn Snyder and the Jazz usually say? And that is a real concern. As we're recording this podcast, Miami's offensive rating in clutch time, which is considered the last 5 minutes and within the last five or fewer points, their offensive rating is 100. 100 is the fourth worst offensive rating in clutch time. And
I want to be careful because, well, that's a stat that I that plays into the narrative I'm trying to spin. I do think that, like, you know,
the sample is,
you know, and
sure,
I'm very reticent to kind of get into stuff like that, because also, like, clutch time is much more, it's not just the sample small, but the sample is biased. There's more time running the shot clock down. There's more time need to take a three. There's more time fouling intentionally. There's the much higher proportion of those, even that limited number of possessions, are sort of special teams plays, if you will. And it varies across. So, like, while that would be a convenient stat for the narrative I think we both would like to tell. Sure.
How about this one? Miami's half court offensive rating when Kyle Lowry is on the floor cleaning the glass filter is a little bit above league average.
Yeah, that's a little bit above league average, and put that up against playoff defenses, second round playoff defenses. Is that good enough? Maybe if their defense is good enough. Like, it's not an abomination, but it's like, it's not a, oh, sure, they'll be fine. It puts them, I feel like it puts them in a very similar category as the Celtics, really, where it's like they're going to have to rely on, like, individual moxie and playmaking and shot making. Boston's pretty well equipped to do that too, with, like, similar and perhaps even with as played superior defensive personnel.
It's jumping back to the West, but that made me think of, there is going to be at least one and possibly more series that depend on Dallas's, that swing entirely on Dallas's role players making or missing open three-pointers.
So what do you got for us, Maxi Kleber?
Maxi Kleber, DFS, Reggie Bullock.
Spencer Dinwiddie.
It is going to be, like, there are people who are like, who could be like, that these players are going to decide a playoff series? Yes, they absolutely are, because a lot of what...
Well, okay, these
defense is
these
about.
Players often decide playoff series. We just don't, like, notice it.
They do.
Like, you know, it became more noticeable because he ended up scoring all those points. But if that Clippers Utah series plays out slightly differently, like, Terrence Mann could have scored like 9 points in a couple of those games and had a huge amount of success just because him making his first two corner threes when Utah's, like, game plan was to not rotate to him. All of a sudden we have to change that, and now, like, all of a sudden, oh, it's now Marcus Morris getting those shots, now it's Reggie Jackson getting open driving lanes, now it's all these other things. So even if it's not directly, just, like, you know, this is very much a sliding doors thing, is if in that game specifically, if he misses his first two corner threes instead of makes them, how different does that entire game play out? Because for a guy who is a reluctant shooter at times, you can see that becoming record scratch theater pretty quickly.
Let's exclude the Nets from this for just a second. So we already said we defined the top four. I think we agreed on it as Miami, Milwaukee, Philly, and Boston in no particular order.
Well, I mean, I know, it's like, can we really? I mean, it feels very weird, even though, like, had them having to go, probably having to go through the play-in game, like, it does feel kind of weird because, you know.
Yes.
I think they have the guy who was the best player in the playoffs last year, who is back on the floor and is still pretty damn good in Kevin Durant. He was good. Let's pause for a second. He was good last night against Philly.
He's incredible. And Durant, his ability to be able to do what he does against anyone is truly special. And the Nets, I could believe that they can beat anyone. Like, if you were to tell me the Nets won a series against anyone, it would not for me. However, winning three, in this case, if we're talking about making it out of the Eastern Conference, or four if we're talking about winning an NBA championship, series like that, especially when you are the road team in all of them, though depending on certain requirements, that might actually be an advantage, that is just a lot to ask. And the Nets, they have questions, not choices, in terms of the rest of their rotation. Like, I mean, they played better defensively last night, but generally speaking, I think there are going to be some real challenges there. And maybe I'm just not believing in Steve Nash and this coaching staff have more answers than I think they do. But in terms of personnel, it just seems like it's going to be hard to get all that there.
I think that if they get Simmons on the floor and engaged with them, like, all of a sudden you've playoff Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons at either the 3 or 4 or the 4 or 5 on defense. That is an elite playoff defensive pairing. Like, you can, true. You start there, you can do some things. So I think that is something that, you know, we're projecting a little bit ahead, but, you know, like, I don't think anyone realistically thinks that, like, getting nothing from Simmons makes the Nets, you know, it's a little bit of the same thing with Brook Lopez, right? We're kind of, when we're penciling in Brooklyn to this, like, contender level, we're assuming at least a decent contribution from Simmons.
Yeah, that's fair. So I'll narrow the field then. Bulls, Cavs, Raptors, and then whichever team, Hawks, Hornets, I think it's going to be the Hawks, makes it out of that other spot, you know, makes it into the top 10. Which of that group, not knowing who they're going to face, do you think is the most interesting as a, like, potential upset team, like, to potentially pull one?
Hawks. It's you know, they, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Take over a series equity with Trey. And they've so underperformed their talent this year that, you know, is lightning in a bottle for a couple weeks possible? Yeah. Like, I think that I don't think that, like, as they're going to be on the floor, I don't think the Cavs have a ton of equity. The Hornets make it in, like, they're going to give up 130 a game. I don't know. Maybe I'm shortchanging the Bulls a little bit just because we've sort of been at this, like, this is a great regular season story in Chicago and kind of move past it. But I still, I mean, well, let me flip it around to you. If you were one of those contending teams, would you rather play the Bulls? Like, not even caring about home court, would you rather play the Bulls or the Hawks?
It would depend a little bit on personnel, but I think I'd rather play the Bulls.
I think most teams, when they're in our heart of hearts, would answer that. It's like, okay, well, you know, yeah, they got some good players, but we can figure some stuff out against them. And it's just like, well, if we figure out how to stop Trey, it's like, well, have fun.
The other note that I'll make is that another team that hasn't had it the whole time, but narrowing the field to just when Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam play together, +4.3 cleaning the glass net rating for the Raptors. I don't think that's... +4.3 isn't good enough, I'd think, to put a charge into these best teams.
Can you win a playoff series with six guys in today's NBA?
I don't
think
so. I personally don't think so. I could... The Raptors, to me, I think of them and the Cavs similarly, where I think I'll probably pick a longer series, but I don't think that they would be likely to win it. Like, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that, I mean, I think you look at the Raptors and, you know, we hate doing this, but, like, I think you say, well, the future's really interesting there. They add a couple things here and they can start to get really interesting, but they're not really, like, they're not really interesting yet. It's sort of like they're good, but do they have enough shooting or size? It's like they're light at sort of both ends of the spectrum.
What I find so fascinating about the Raptors is that this has been a different season in certain ways, you know, with availability and everything else. But I genuinely feel that through a circuitous route, they ended up in exactly the place that caused me to think they might do something different last offseason, which is their path to being a team that wins multiple rounds in the playoffs over the next 3 years, like, you know, winning multiple rounds in the same year, is difficult. You know that Siakam and Van Vliet are 27 at this point. This is their age 27 season. So you have to assume that they're at least close to where they're to their maximal. OG can still grow. Scottie Barnes is super young. Gary Trent can do that. But they're also at this point where they're not exactly asset rich. They don't have a ton of spending power / flexibility. And so the defining question for me with Masai a year ago was, and ownership, and this is in many ways an ownership decision, though he has so much pull with them that you think he could pull them in a direction should he want to, is how do you feel about that? You know, there are different takes on how desirable it is to be a consistently good but also not high championship equity franchise. And I'm guessing that they would prefer it on the idea that if you have the best general manager in the league, you have a very good coach, maybe you can get from there, where arguably the Raptors were before 18-19, to where they were in 18-19. But how many times are you going to be able to get Kawhi Leonard?
I mean, I think that they're pretty championship or bust there. I don't think that they, like, I think you can see it in how they approached last season. That they're gonna try to do stuff. Now whether they succeed and what the stuff to do is, I don't know. maybe with since he's gonna be a free agent after next year, maybe they make a run at Zion and see if they like do the first time is tragedy, second time is farce kind of thing. there's no chance of that happening. It just struck me as he was like sort of the most like the highest level possible impending free agent next year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to put anything past Masai Ujiri. That's he has earned that respect, and he will have it for a long time. So we've spent a lot of time on the East here. Let's think a little bit about the Western Conference and the time that we have left. How much faith do you have? Like, I think the Suns are a fairly understood commodity. I would argue that the Jazz are. Do you think that there's something different? Like, has Donovan Mitchell taken enough of a step forward that you think about them differently as a playoff team?
Nope. I think he has, it seems like, the rest of the roster. And, like Joe Ingles looked like he may have aged out of that this year anyway. But him aging out is, they still don't really have, like, the fact that adding House might like meaningfully upgrade their like perimeter defensive chops against top scorers, that like think to the fact that you can say that says things. Can they do anything resembling the style that makes them successful in the regular season in the postseason? Even when they've had success the last couple of years in the postseason, it's sort of been outside of their normal identity. And, you know, Mitchell is not averse to going hero ball, which is, you know, I imagine Ben Taylor and I are planning a home and home podcast to discuss, among other things, Donovan Mitchell, because I think we have very differing opinions of him. And my I think that he can tend to short circuit them, and sort of while he individually kind of goes crazy, all of a sudden it's like, well, it's a good thing we have Bojan Bogdanovic just standing in the corner doing nothing. And so that's sort of the, like, all this other stuff that the Jazz have their resources invested in, the style they tend to go to offensively in the playoff, all of a sudden like kind of obviates that. And I don't think that leaves them with enough.
The other huge ripple effect there is, you brought up personnel, is that Utah has to me, because of the limited players that they're going to play defensively, they have to score at a really high level, not just at a, you know, like a pretty good level, because their defense is going to give stuff up. And Rudy Gobert is amazing, but when you think about playing those top six teams in the NBA, like, there you can't really do it in the same way as you can against the bottom 15. And not every team is going to be the Clippers and be just a horrendous matchup for what they want to do, but the odds that they face three favorable matchups in three rounds of the playoffs, you know, to win the West, that's really hard. And the Warriors are in a strange place because we haven't seen them at 100% at all, but I think we kind of understand what they are. Do we?
Like, Steph has been, like, he's been shooting poorly for a long time. I don't think Clay has probably looked better physically than we might have expected. I don't know if we know what level he's at in terms of, like, playoff effectiveness, both ends of the floor. Draymond question.
Yeah. For me, they're high ceiling, low floor. I think that relative to other good teams.
we know about them and that we don't know about them.
The idea that there is more variance with the Warriors because of the way that they play.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'll once they get their guys back, they'll defend it at a pretty good level. And there's also the element that will be potentially relevant or not, we'll have to see, is that I think a lot about the 2015 playoff run with this, is that it generally takes Steve Kerr and the coaching staff a few games to figure out the optimal strategy as opposed to just starting there. And if they don't have a significant talent advantage like they have in a lot of series, that could rear its head. I mean, it nearly did against OKC in 2016, where it took them a little bit of time to figure everything out. And, I mean, also OKC, you know, they played their part in that series going longer as well. But if the Warriors are the three, and I would say, knowing what we know right now, that's the more likely outcome, just because Memphis has an easier schedule and they have their key guys other than Dylan Brooks, but they're doing fine without him. And so for the Warriors, to me, being the six versus being the two versus being the three makes a huge, huge difference.
Just for having home court in that second round?
For having an easier first round matchup.
Oh.
Like, well, I think there's a chance that the Warriors lose in the first round.
So
if they're the three.
Here's an interesting thing that sort of came up yesterday. Maybe this cuts either way. If you're the three seed, you know who you're playing for, you know, a week. If you're the two seed, you have to be ready for, you have to start getting ready for four different teams.
No, for two, if you're the two, because it's only you can only face the seven.
Oh, yeah, you're right. No, wait, is it?
The one is hard, but you assume that they're...
Yeah, no, how do I...
Because the play-in format is weird.
It could be any of four teams with the one seed, that's right.
Yes.
Oh.
That in particular, like this year in the East could be wild because some of those teams are very, very different. The possibility that, so it's Raptors, Nets, and Kyrie Irving can't play in Toronto, so then they get the eight seed, and
they play Philly in the first round.
Congratulations. Yeah. Or Miami.
Yeah. Congratulations. you had the best record in the conference. Here's Kevin Durant.
And,
cheers.
Yeah. And the other, I talked about this a little bit with our mutual friend Jared Dubin a couple weeks ago. This preliminarily, because the free agent class is so bad and because the league, like the finances haven't all the way kicked in yet, in quote unquote normal circumstances, this is looking like a pretty unremarkable offseason. Like there aren't big free agents hitting. There are some extension decisions and that sort of thing. It looks like Jokic is basically already done. He wouldn't change teams now anyway. But the way that can change is it's not so much about how teams fare in the abstract. It's about how they fare relative to expectations.
Well, not just how they like. It's more just not even relevant to expectations, but it's more like how it happens. Like,
yes, that's fair.
You know, there's a lot of smoke about like Dame Lillard last summer, and how much like if they had just kind of lost a desultory six game series to Denver, maybe not. If that series hadn't pivoted on them losing a game where Dame scores 9,000 points and they still lose, that's the kind of thing. Oh man, I need some help. Like I think that more even than the fact of the six game loss, the manner of it kind of led to a lot of I think the upheaval in Portland this year.
Sure, and that far be it for Neil O'Shea to think that a team is better than his team is better and better constructed than they actually are. Like it allowed him to feed into those impulses, which are not even impulses, they're just how he is.
You hate to see it.
But in the East, the East in particular, I was going to say, but then also that 3-6 in the West, because, I mean, losing to a good team is certainly less painful than losing to a bad team, but losing earlier. So there are going to be some reckonings that happen. And then the other part of that, we talked about the, like...
So I think that's, especially in a year where the seedings are weird, I think that's silly. I know it doesn't change the fact that it's not going to be true, but I think that's silly. Like, oh,
you end up playing... But that's the beauty of this in many ways, is that... the actors in this do not have to be rational, whether we're talking about owners or general managers or players.
It's like say the Bucks had lost, like somehow it would have been better if the Bucks had lost, like the brackets had worked out and they had played the Nets in the conference finals instead of the second round, and that's a more acceptable loss than like that doesn't make any, you know, you're still playing against Kevin freaking Durant. So like, yeah, so Brooklyn gets the 8 seed and they upset Miami or something like that. It's like, well, okay, well, yes, we lost in the first round, but yeah, we lost to a team that was like pretty obviously, though subjectively, like far better than an 8 seed would be, even though, oh man, a first round of defeat, that's disastrous. But like, that's it, like, I agree that affects decision making, but I don't think it should. Like, that's the kind of thing that, like, on the inside, you're supposed to be able to, like, okay, well, that's what people are talking, but we're going to ignore that because we know better. But
you brought up sliding doors and then Damian Lillard separately before. The other one that I was inspired on with that last year was the Washington Wizards. The Washington Wizards had the 22nd best net rating last year, but technically made it into the playoffs. And if that didn't happen, does Bradley, you know, like, let's say this year they were missing it again, as opposed to missing it for the first time in a row. Does Bradley Beal see it differently? Or is he just kind of in? I've used the Thelma and Louise analogy before. Is he just riding off the cliff with them because that's what he wants? And if that's what he wants, more power to him.
I was not expecting Thelma and Louise to enter this conversation, but there we are.
There we are.
Does that make him Brad Pitt in this? No. Okay.
I think it makes him. Yeah, I can't. I'm not going to go there. But those, because the beauty of basketball is that there are so many different decision makers, and what they prioritize doesn't have to be what we would. It doesn't have to even be what they would have done 5 years before. Like, they can make their decision, and sometimes they make wrong decisions. Like, even wrong decisions for what they thought they wanted. Like, that sort of thing. And, you know, I Jeremy Grant is somebody who often comes to mind there, where I applaud Jeremy Grant for owning what he valued, and I hope he's happy with it. It seems like he is. And if that, I talk about this with people in terms of the colleges they choose, is that the only mistake you can make is not being true to yourself. And there's going to be some weird stuff that happens inspired by how these seasons end. And that is what is going to provide the intrigue that exists in the offseason.
No, I think that's right. I think we roundabout way that we got there. I totally agree with you.
I'll end this with two basic questions. One is, what teams, what players, what situations are you most interested in watching over the next couple weeks? So that's this is the span right before the final 2 week push. So what teams, what are you interested in?
Obviously, the big one is wanting to see when and how Simmons gets on the floor for. I think these are all sort of a piece. Simmons getting back on the floor, it's Draymond getting back on the floor, it's Brook Lopez getting back on the floor. Those are the big ones. The Celtics continue to play this way is sort of another big one. Especially, you know, offensively. I mean, I think that part of the reason why I'm sort of been swooning over them is we're in the midst of a very nice Jason Tatum run, and that's, yes. It is easy to get caught up in the moment. Oh, he scored 132 points in his last 4 games. ... Well, okay, come see me when he has a 4-game stretch where he scores 85, which is, you know, it's no more than 4 games around the corner at any given time. So, those are the things I'm looking for. Just like guys getting back on the court and seeing what they have. And
especially also, if they can make it in the next 2 weeks, because then they'll have some time to get right before the 16 starts.
Sure. And also, you know, also our, you know, as always, our focus is going to get pulled because, you know, we get to, excuse me, we get to start thinking about the draft for the first time all year for some of us.
That's very true. This will probably be, just as a practical consideration, these are probably the last 2 weeks that I'm going to watch the worst teams very closely. Like, I'm going to try to pick my spots because, A, some of them, which has already happened, are start to pull enough players that you can't necessarily assess them well.
Pour some out for Josh Hart for being sort of the
oh boy.
Oh for doing boy. The for doing like the you know, the Will Smith meme.
Yeah, and for doing yeoman's work going into a non-guaranteed season is always fun, though I think that will get picked up. And then so that's a shift. So, you know, watching more of Shea. That's going to be something Nate and I talk about in the 15 and 16 in a couple days. And a few of those circumstances, because I know that the data points just get less, they get more scattered after that. And so, and some of it will also be just watching older film, and that I'll do probably starting around the second round of the playoffs. And the other question I wanted to ask you is, knowing what we know right now, I'll let you pick one in the East and one in the West. It can be any round. What playoff series do you most want to see? You can make it happen however you want. You don't have to pick how it happens. It's just what do you most want to see?
I mean, doesn't everyone just want to see Sixers Nets just for the memes, if nothing else? I mean, that's too easy. So
we'll pick it. You can pick a second one there.
I mean, at this point, I would sort of like to see, Boston Miami would be a real loser goes home, loser leaves town match. Like we're the only defensive grindy rock fight winner around these parts now. I'd be very interested to see, especially after the play-in last year. I'd be interested in seven games of Memphis and Golden State.
Yes, Memphis has done so well against the Warriors over the last few years. And I mean, the other one, I guess it's probably too pie in the sky.
By the way, do you remember very early in the season when it was the first couple weeks of the season, the Bulls and the Knicks played each other three times, and they were all ludicrous games. I can't wait to see that in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. I was just thinking about theoretically, even if they're not at full strength, this Denver team facing somebody that's good but not ridiculous. I don't know, that Denver, the one that I've been circling in the East and the West, Suns Warriors is kind of an obvious, that'd be a really high level series and all that. But Denver Dallas is just, it would just be so enticing for me of you get to see Luka in a much more, against a much more favorable opponent for him individually offensively, but also just how do they want to defend Jokic, all those different elements. But we also don't know what iteration of the Nuggets we're going to get. But Mavs Nuggets, Mavs, I mean, Nate and I just did it for the NBA strategy stream, Mavs Jazz, pretty interesting as well. But yeah, I would say probably Suns Warriors, Grizzlies Warriors are my
favorite. Right now, I gotta be honest, I'm good on the Jazz in the playoffs right now. Show me something different, and then I'll be back. I'm gonna watch the games, of course, but it's just in terms of what I feel like I really need to see, maybe not that one.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely, it was fun as always. We look back over this pod, we as usual took the scenic route to get to where we went.
Absolutely, wouldn't have it any other way.
All right, thanks, Lathany.
Thanks again to Seth Partnow for taking the time to come on. You can read his excellent work at The Athletic. You can read his excellent book, The Mid-Range Theory, which is available, and I'm reading it right now. It is fantastic. I could not recommend it more highly for where I am, but I'm pretty sure the whole thing will be that good as well. You can also check out the Nerdist She Wrote podcast and follow him on Twitter at Seth Partnow, SethPartnow. Love having him on and getting that perspective. And yeah, we're getting closer to the stretch run, so I'm super excited about that and to see where all of this goes. If you want to support the podcast, there are a lot of different ways you can do it. You can subscribe, download every episode. That is particularly great for Real GM Radio because it will never come out on a specific day or time. It's just going to be my availability, guest availability. So subscribing, whatever podcast player you use, that's great. You can also help other people find the show through ratings, reviews, or social media. Really do appreciate that as well. And the single most important thing for this show and any other that has them is to check out our sponsors. For us, that is BetOnline. Use that CLNS50 code to both tell them that you came from us, but more importantly for you, to get a 50% welcome bonus, which is really, really cool. You can also check out my other endeavors, Dunked On and Dunked On Prime, going incredibly strong. Nate and I are doing 5, sometimes 5+ episodes in a week. I think that's going to be very common in the playoffs as well. We just did our small forward positional rankings, which was a fascinating conversation, and gamers and 15s and 60 and all that kind of stuff. I guess I've now made that the plural of it, which I enjoy. 15s and 60. I like it better. It's like Attorneys General. And the NBA strategy stream, which is Nate and I broadcasting games on League Pass, that is going to continue for Mondays for the rest of the regular season. And we have Clippers Cavs as the game for this coming Monday, which should be a lot of fun. Then my written work is at The Athletic. Don't have a ton in the offing now, but I have a couple ideas that need to turn into pieces. I'm a little bit jealous of Keith Smith. I was working in my head on a Zion piece, and then he wrote the exact piece that I intended to write and did a super good job. So you should check that out if you haven't already. And I'm sure I'll have stuff soon. I have a couple ideas. I just need to actually put digital pen to digital paper and start start getting working on that. If you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get it to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is an absolute promise. I will try to respond, but I'm not the greatest at that. So the promise is to read it, and that's why I consider it feedback in that sense, not a necessarily a dialogue, though at times it is, of course. And that is all for now. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.